Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1806, with a release date of March 23rd, 2012, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Ham radio and social networks respond following an earthquake in Mexico. An APRS-equipped ocean buoy is released off the coast of Alaska. Missouri hams could be hit hard by a proposed distracted driving law. London Olympic ham radio stations are announced, and the birds are back. Find out what we mean on Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1806, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from our Southeast Bureau in Birmingham, Alabama, here is David Black, KB4KCH.
Amateur radio operators and the social media respond following an earthquake that hit southwest Mexico March 20th. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in our newsroom with what we know so far.
What's been described as a powerful and prolonged earthquake rocked parts of Mexico on Tuesday, March 20th. The 7.6 magnitude tremor hit near the Pacific Coast resort town of Acapulco. According to news reports, some homes were toppled near the quake's epicenter. Electricity and telephone communications were lost for a time. But despite the earthquake's power, Mexican President Felipe Calderón and officials across the country said that there were no reports of serious injuries. While there was some reported damage to the nation's internal communications infrastructure, Mexico's connection to the outside world, for the most part, remained unscathed. So far, nothing has been heard of any activation of any domestic Mexican ham radio emergency group. As we go to air, the only international ham radio organization we've heard about is a group called the International Radio Emergency Support Coalition. IRESC President Erkan Canal, TA0U, in Istanbul, Turkey, worked with about 8 or 9 hams in Mexico passing early damage assessment reports to the European continent. Some of this communications audio was posted on Facebook.
In Guerrero, Mexico, in the Mexico state of Guerrero, it's okay also. That's the news I have, the last news I have now. So we try to continue informing to you. This is Echo 1, Hotel Foxtrot Tango. Do you copy? Tango Alpha 0, uniform. Go ahead.
Okay, Echo 1, Hotel.
You can hear the entire communication session at tinyurl.com/IRESC-Mexico-quake. But the real story in this case is the response by the people in the affected areas. While telephone and cellular service was jammed, as is the case often after events like this, broadband connections were still open and quite useful. Anyone watching or listening to a broadcast news report anywhere in the world often heard of tweets from residents in the quake area being quoted as news sources and giving short eyewitness assessments via Twitter. Also, news organizations around the globe were asking people with relatives in the quake zone to call in or post to the station's website the latest news that they might have. In other words, news organizations were literally handling health and welfare traffic that, until a year or so ago, was primarily the domain of radio amateurs involved in emergency communications. Quite a change from days gone by. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. I'm in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
More in future Amateur Radio Newsline reports. The role of amateur radio in emergency communications continues to grow and will become even more vital in the future. That's the message from Connecticut Section Emergency Coordinator Wayne Grunland, N1CLV, at the annual meeting of that state's ARES groups over the weekend of March 17th and 18th. Grunland says a series of natural disasters last year showcased the importance of amateur radio during emergencies. These include Tropical Storm Irene, a pre-season nor'easter in October, and the tornadoes that swept western Massachusetts last summer. Grunland says the snowstorm in particular caused havoc by knocking out phone and electrical service for up to 2 weeks, especially in the Farmington area. These two disasters led to formation of Governor Daniel Malloy's two-storm study inquiry. Among the panel's recommendations is holding a real-time training exercise this year, one that would involve municipalities municipalities, the Red Cross, and ARES to determine what assets are available and what improvement is needed. Such a statewide exercise is now set for July 28th to the 30th and will involve amateur radio resources. You can find more on the web at tinyurl.com/ct-rescue-radio. Missouri drivers, including hams, CB operators, emergency response personnel, and even someone just tuning a vehicle's AM radio, could find themselves standing before a judge. This if a new distracted driving law is enacted as proposed to that state's legislature. Matthew Chambers, NR0Q, is here with the rather strange details.
If you were to get pulled over this morning and told that you were getting a ticket for distracted driving because you took a sip of coffee during your morning commute, would you be surprised? If a Missouri Senate bill written by Senator Bill Stelfer of Saline County passes, this is what Missouri drivers could be facing. Senate Bill 717 would make it a Class C misdemeanor to fail to give full time and attention to the operation of the motor vehicle, fail to maintain a proper lookout while operating a motor vehicle, or engage in any other activity which causes the operator to be distracted from the primary mission of driving such motor vehicle. There are no exemptions for hands-free devices, two-way or CB-type radios, or for operators of emergency vehicles or law enforcement personnel. If passed as written, the police officer writing a ticket to enforce this would most likely also have to write themselves a ticket for distracted driving as well. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, this is Matthew Chambers, NR0Q, near Macon, Missouri.
While it may sound funny to think of a police officer having to cite himself for using his department's radio system, it might one day happen in the Show Me State. The rather short but complete text of this proposed law is online at tinyurl.com/mo-distracted-driving. A group of oceanography and aeronautical engineering students from the U.S. Naval Academy has deployed a radio-equipped ocean buoy rigged to monitor weather in the harsh conditions of the Arctic. Named Ice Goat 1, the buoy was placed off the coast of Point Barrow, Alaska. Once the winter ice melts, the buoy will begin its sea voyage. In addition to its scientific monitoring gear, Ice Goat 1 carries an APRS beacon operating on 145.825 MHz. The position packets can be relayed via the International Space Station Digipeater. However, as the ISS only rises 1.5 degrees above the horizon at Arctic latitudes, reports of direct reception of the 145.825 beacon are being sought from any Alaskan and eventually Pacific Northwest amateur radio stations that may be in range of Ice Goat 1. Reception reports go by Memail to wb4apr@amsat.org. Some special event call signs will be activated to celebrate the London 2012 Olympic and Paralympic Games. The London station, 2012L, will be active through the duration of the games. It will be located at the historic Eltham Palace, southeast London, and will operate all modes on 160 through 2 meters. You can get more information about it on the web at www.2012l.com. The Welsh station, 2012W, will be operational on all bands from 160 meters through 23 centimeters and all modes including single sideband TV and satellites. It will be located at Whitmore Bay on Barry Island. More information is available on the web from www.2012w.com. 2012L and 2012W go on the air July 27th. The Radio Society of Great Britain has been granted use of the Games Inspire trademark for these stations. Special QSL cards will be available to all stations contacted. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WA4 TEP repeater serving Greenville, North Carolina. The birds are back. New interim regulatory procedures take effect soon for certain new towers to address bird kills. Yet the issue remains a sensitive one for many people in broadcasting, two-way radio, and others who own and maintain tall, lighted towers. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, has details.
A new report from the FCC is likely to be scrutinized by anyone involved in the tower versus birds debate. Among its assertions is that, by best estimate, communication tower strikes by avian creatures do kill 6.6 million birds a year in the United States. Even so, while proposed regulatory changes may affect the total somewhat, bird deaths from towers are and will remain only a tiny fraction of bird deaths from all causes. The report also notes that while communications towers contribute to the overall adverse impacts of all human activities on bird populations, communication tower collisions are only responsible for approximately 0.3% of the more than 2 billion annual bird deaths that currently occur due to cats and other predators. In addition, these deaths occur against a backdrop of high natural mortality to migrating birds due to a number of factors. Although the absolute number of birds killed at communication towers is large, towers are a relatively minor contributor to total human-caused avian mortality, and the impact of these deaths is even likely smaller when considered in the context of high natural mortality. These findings are a part of a Federal Communications Commission report assessing the environmental impacts of its antenna structure registration system. The report was prepared by the Maryland-based firm, the URS Group, for the FCC's Wireless Telecommunications Bureau. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
The report is likely to continue the ongoing debate over what the permanent tower registration rules and procedures should be. If you want to read the details, they're available at tinyurl.com/the-final-PEA. The FCC wants to know how you feel about the government or private enterprises using their ability to order a shutdown of broadband communications systems during emergencies or perceived emergencies. With details on that, here's Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Lasik, K9BIK.
The Federal Communications Commission's Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau and Wireless Telecommunications Bureau are jointly seeking comment on issues related to intentional interruptions of commercial mobile radio service by government authorities for matters deemed in the interest of public safety. The issue stems from Bay Area Rapid Transit's shutdown of cellular telephone service on August 11th of last year in the face of political and social protests taking place in the San Francisco area. According to General Docket Number 12-52, any intentional interruption of wireless service, no matter how brief or localized, raises significant concerns and implicates substantial legal and policy questions. The service interruption last summer drew sharp criticism, and state and local governments have recently grappled with how to address possible future events. The FCC says that it is concerned that there has been insufficient discussion, analysis, and consideration of the questions raised by intentional interruptions of wireless service by government authorities. As a result, Docket 12-52 seeks comment on the legal constraints and policy considerations that bear on an intentional interruption of wireless service by government agencies for the purpose of ensuring public safety. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Lasik, K9BIK in Zion, Illinois.
General Docket Number 12-52 carries a commentary cutoff date of April 30th and a reply comment date of May 30th. The entire text is available in PDF format at tinyurl.com/turn-off-cellphones. In what might just be a simple mistake, the FCC has been forced to issue an order that proposes modifying the license of Todd Wilson, WH6DWF, of Honolulu, Hawaii, from general to technician. Wilson did nothing wrong. In fact, he appears to simply be the victim of a clerical error by the administering volunteer examiner. In November 2011, the ARRL VEC sent an electronic data file to the commission, requesting that the agency issue Wilson a general class license, which it did. A few weeks later, in January 2012, the ARRL VEC notifies the FCC that Wilson's information was incorrect and he did not qualify for a general class license. The ARRL VEC also requested that the commission modify Wilson's license to show him as a technician class license holder. On March 15th, the commission issued an order of proposed modification, seeking to change Wilson's weapons license class from general to technician. In its order, the FCC said that granting general class amateur radio privileges to Wilson had been improper. It said the grant of general class operator privileges was erroneous because he was not eligible to receive examination credit for one of the elements an applicant must pass in order to obtain a general class ham license. Rather, Wilson appears to be currently authorized to operate with general class operator privileges due to an error made during the application process. But it may not be over yet. Under the law, Wilson has until April 14th to appeal the modification order by submitting a written statement containing sufficient evidence to show that the modification would not be in the public interest. If he fails to do so, the license modification back to technician class will come into effect. And in what may well be a time record between FCC actions, the Commission reaffirms a second $25,000 fine against California resident Gabriel Garcia, this time for not allowing a Commission inspection of various unlicensed radio stations in the San Jose area. In May 2011, the Enforcement Bureau's San Francisco office originally issued a $25,000 penalty. That's because it said Garcia was operating illegal stations on three frequencies in the San Jose area and apparently was interfering with the aviation radio services band. The commission said Garcia did not respond to the notice, so the fine has now progressed into a notice of forfeiture. Now the commission affirms the second $25,000 forfeiture based on Garcia's refusal to give inspectors access to the properties from which the stations were allegedly operating, this to permit physical inspection of the equipment being used. If Garcia fails to pay the two fines in the allotted 30 days each, the matters will likely be turned over to the Department of Justice for collection. The commission also issues a notice of unauthorized operation and of interference to licensed radio stations to a pair of Lurgan, Pennsylvania residents. With details on that, here's Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Butera Howell.
In a letter to the unnamed parties, the Northeast Region Enforcement Bureau in Philadelphia stated that it had received a complaint from a licensed telecommunications provider regarding interference in the 450 to 470 megahertz band. Also, that they had traced the interference to a radio transmitting device operating in Lurgan, Pennsylvania. On February 17th, agents confirmed by direction finding that the source of the interference was emanating from a residence in Lurgan. During an equipment inspection, agents confirmed that the device causing the interference was designed to jam radio transmissions. In its letter to the Lurgan residents, the FCC notified them that unauthorized operation of a radio transmitting device designed to jam radio communications must cease immediately. It warned them that the continued operation of such a device may result in seizure of the offending equipment and/or a court order prohibiting them from operating such devices. Also, that this type of unauthorized operation could subject them to substantial monetary forfeitures and criminal sanctions, including imprisonment. The two people involved in this matter were given 10 days from the receipt of the notice to provide information regarding the entity from whom they purchased the device, including copies of any receipts or invoices. They were also given the opportunity to respond with any other information they believe relevant to the notice. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Butera Howell, KB3TZD, not far away in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
The two Lurgan residents were also advised that the notice of unauthorized operation they received or their response to it would not preclude the FCC from pursuing additional sanctions based upon its investigation of the incident. The winter issue of the free Tucson Amateur Packet Radio PSR Journal is now available to download. This quarterly publication is full of technical, non-technical, and user digital information and articles. You can download the free winter PSR from tapper.org/PSR/PSR117.pdf. Previous issues are also available free from Tucson Amateur Packet Radio's website, available at tapr.org. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. The United Kingdom now has a city named as the birthplace of radio, at least in that nation. Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, is here with details.
Chelmsford, acknowledged as the birthplace of radio and home to the Marconi Company for many years, is one of the three new cities created to mark the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. This year also marks the 100th anniversary of the establishment by Marconi of the first purpose-built radio factory in New Street, Chelmsford, in 1912. This comes to you from G4NJH in Nottingham.
If you've never heard the term, the Queen's Diamond Jubilee, this will be an extended weekend from June 2nd to the 5th to celebrate the 60th anniversary of Queen Elizabeth II. The Queen came to the throne February 6, 1952. Her coronation took place June 2, 1953. Some good news to pass along about the Hamsat VO-52 ham radio satellite. A report received from the ISRO Satellite Center in Bangalore, India, March 14th says Hamsat is back on the air and operating properly. According to VU-2WMY, commands to reactivate the Dutch-built PE-1RAH orbital transponder on Hamsat were sent during an ascending pass over India. The commands were acknowledged and confirmed by return telemetry. At the same time, the beacon signal was heard loud and strong in Bangalore. Stations in Europe and North America report good signals from VO-52 immediately after the transponder activated. Two-way contacts were soon completed through the Hamsat VO-52 transponder. Also, Hector Martinez, CO6CBF, reports that the Cuban Amateur Radio Federation has created its first official satellite group. Martinez says he, along with CM2ESP and CO7WT, formed the group and made the formal recognition request to the Federation headquarters, which was approved March 3rd. The official name of the organization is the Grupo de Radio Aficionados para Operaciones Satelitales. Its principal mission is to promote amateur radio by satellites in Cuba and motivate Cuban hams to operate on the satellites. A first meeting is planned for Havana in the near future. Special event station GB100MGY will be on the air from April 6th to the 26th to mark the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic in 1912. The operation will take place from the Fort Perch Rock Marine Radio Museum at New Brighton in the United Kingdom. In addition to the regular HF bands, the planners of GB100MGY have received special permission from UK telecommunications regulator Ofcom to use the call sign on 502 kHz. If you don't have gear to transmit on 502 kHz, crossband QSOs will be available on 3.566 or 7.066 MHz from April 12th to the 18th as propagation permits. For more information on this special event station, take your web browser to www.fortperchrockmarineradiomuseum.co.uk. And yep, Fort Perch Rock Marine Radio Museum may be a tongue twister to pronounce, but it's all spelled as one word. The Worldwide Iron Ham Contest, originally planned for June, has now been rescheduled. In order to avoid having two South American contests in the same day, the Araucaria DX Group decided to move the Iron Ham Competition to the last full weekend in December. As a result, the Worldwide Iron Ham Contest begins Saturday, December 29th at 1200 hours UTC and ends Sunday, December 30th at 1159 UTC. You can find more on this event in both English and Portuguese online at www.araucariadx.com. In DX, the Buddies and the Caribbean Mini D-Expedition Group will be operational from Montserrat between April 8th and 16th with a new group of operators who've never experienced the other side of a pileup. Because of severe baggage limits on the flight from Antigua to Montserrat, they'll be limited to low-power radios and buddy pole portable antenna systems. There will be several villa stations in operation on 160 through 10 meters using CW, sideband, RIDI, or PSK. At the same time, several teams will be battery-only, field-portable either from Montserrat beaches or scenic mountaintops. You can QSL via the Logbook of the World, EQSL, or you can mail to the operator. Home call sign. DL7BC will be active from Mayotte Island March 20th to April 6th. You can QSL as directed on the air. WA2YUN is currently operational portable KH9 from Wake Island and will be active another year or more. Activities on the HF bands including 160 and 80 meters. He's also been active on 6 meters. You can QSL via K2PF. F4DTO and F4GFE plan to be active from Albania as ZA-100I, this between April 22nd and 29th. Operations will be on 40 through 10 meters on sideband only. You can QSL via F4DTO, direct or through the Bureau. Members of the Malaysian Amateur Radio Transmitter Society and the 9M4 SDX team will be active as 9M0L from Pulau Lying Island in East Malaysia between April 10th and 24th. The team will have four stations using spider beam antennas. QSL direct to the 9MOL team, Penyang, at PO Box 125, GPO 10710, Penang Island, Malaysia, or by the Bureau to Malaysian Amateur Radio Transmitters Society. Lastly, W7GJ and ZL1RS will once again team up to do a 6 and 2 meter EME de-expedition to Niue between September 9th and 21st. W7GJ will use the call sign ZK2GJ, while ZL1RS will probably use his old call sign, which is ZK2RS. You can QSL ZK2GJ via W7GJ and ZK2RS via ZL1RS direct only. Finally, this week, a new radio sporting event begins in 2013, and it has its roots in sports history. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, is here with the details.
It all started back in August of 2011. That was about when it occurred to Mike Balakis, SV5BYR from Greece, that a big Greek-sponsored radio sport event was missing from the International Ham Radio Contest calendar. By the end of that September, the idea had matured, and so the Ham Radio Triathlon Contest was born. For those of you who do not follow the world of sports, a triathlon involves competition of three continuous and sequential endurance events. And as you have already guessed, it's a Greek word. But unlike the world of athletics, those planning the Ham Radio Triathlon DX contest had to change things a bit to make this activity become reality. In trying to simulate the original triathlon athletic event, planners chose three major ham radio modes for the competition. For the initial outgoing, these will be SSB, CW, and RTTY. The Ham Radio Triathlon will be a 24-hour non-stop event that will take place the first full weekend of February. It will debut next year on Saturday, February 2nd of 2013. And from what we read of the proposed rules, winning this one won't be easy, but it sure looks like a lot of fun. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KI7UP on this side of the Atlantic, and in the western part of the United States, reporting from Scottsdale, Arizona.
SV5BYR says there's still a lot of work to be done and more details to be announced. If you want to learn more in the coming months, we suggest you keep an eye on triathlon-dx-contest.blogspot.com. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. If you'd like to email us, our address is newsline@arnewsline.org. You can also find more information at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website. That's www.arnewsline.org. And if you want to write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, our street address is 28197 Robin Avenue in Santa Clarita, California, zip 91350. Oh, and this reminder, the nominating period for the 2012 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award is now open. Full details and a downloadable nominating form are on our website at arnewsline.org/YHOTY. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm David Black, KB4KCH, from the Southeast Bureau in Birmingham, Alabama, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2012. All rights reserved.